On this episode...
I literally couldn't speak. Like, my mouth would just go dry when I spoke with her as a person. And so she showed up at the house, super hot. I'm Susan Sarandon in a black turtleneck and leather pants. And she opened the door. And again, I couldn't speak for most of the evening. And
it's the quietest dinner party I've ever been to.
From the coveted corner booth in a little bar in the center of the Coachella Valley universe, welcome to another Big Conversation with Patrick Evans and Randy Florence. Gentlemen.
And we're back with another edition of Big Conversations Little Bar. I'm Patrick Evans, and we are here at Skip Page's Little Bar in the center of the Coachella Valley universe. My co-host is, and always will be until we find a suitable replacement, Randy Florence.
And that could be halfway through this episode. I noticed there's people gathering.
There's some auditions after you go, but don't worry about that. Enjoy your cocktail. Everything's good.
Well, thank you. It is, and I want to say I have one shout-out. I always have a good one.
You always do.
Tomorrow, when we record this, I'm not giving any dates. It could be any time this year. My wife and I are celebrating our 43rd wedding anniversary. And in the midst of there, I've given her like 9 or 10 of the best years of my life. So it's been a fantastic 43 years. Welcome to my wife.
She's... That's a phrase you cannot say. That is welcome to my wife.
Well, welcome is my favorite podcast word. You already
Randy
know
says
that.
He, when people come over to his house and he has that bowl for the keys, and then it's just
welcome
to my wife. It's a weird party.
So that's my shout out. Thank
okay,
you.
So this podcast is off to a rousing start already. Well, listen, happy anniversary to both of you guys.
Thank you very much.
She doesn't deserve you. I mean, she deserves much better is what I'm trying to say.
It was better you said that than me.
No, you guys are terrific. And how many years?
42, 43.
43 years.
Yeah.
That is remarkable.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Based on the length of my first marriage, I need about 6 more wives to get to that number. But that is a different story.
For a different episode.
That's an entirely different. Today we were really excited, and... you know, our producer, John McMullen, is here, and he's always pitching great ideas. This is one of his greatest. Kate Zinna is joining us, and she lives here in the Valley, Rancho Mirage, but you are an actor, singer, songwriter, producer, dog rescuer, which is the part that I really want to get into because dogs are, you know, the biggest part of my universe other than my wife and kids.
Well, they're my only part of the only part of my universe.
That's your universe. Is your rescue dogs?
I am a volunteer in my own home for these animals. I'm their personal chef. I am their activities coordinator. Their personal assistant. I dress them. I do everything. So yeah,
this is pretty much like sounding like a my house in the morning, except we don't have pets.
I just wake up and there's
clothes that are laid out for me, and
she's your activity director.
Because you don't want to know what I'd look like.
I think I see a tail wagging. No. Is that a tail that you've got there?
It's something
you,
like
you
that.
You're one diaper away from living at my house.
You know. There you go.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
exactly what Kate wanted to hear.
I know where I'll
your
be
anniversary.
Next, yeah. I'll know where I am next little, week.
Yeah. It's very true.
I'm sorry, Kay, but I'm going to live with a very attractive Canadian actress. You don't mind,
yeah.
do you?
Yeah. So let's start at the start.
Oh, let's start at the start. When I was wearing diapers?
No, all of, yes. back all to the of start? Your different careers.
Well, they're all... everything is just a reflection of childhood trauma, I say. So it's everything you see here is yeah. all just a reflection of me not getting my needs met as an 8-year-old. That's what. So I have an addiction to dogs because I have learned how to be successful when it comes to rescuing dogs and collar and tagging them and getting them spayed and neutered and chasing them down and helping people rehome them. So that's that side. That's that piece of the... my needs not getting met as an 8-year-old. And then leads to being, well, the acting came before the dog stuff. The dog stuff came later. The acting came first when I was at university. I was really going to make my parents proud and become a lawyer or a doctor. And I had a revelation one night, not on mushrooms, not on any drugs. It was very sober.
Well, that gets rid of one of the questions I
yes,
was going to
yeah,
ask.
Yes, so. Yeah, yeah. I mean, the mushrooms were last weekend, the not back then. But no, I recognized that something whispered to me saying, you're meant to be an actor. And I don't know, I won't swear on this, your lovely podcast.
You
but
can.
I,
you like, can.
What the fuck are you talking about? I'm going to be an actor. I was, you know, 8 feet tall back then and very gangly and very smart and going to be an environmental lawyer. Thank you very much. And this voice, it might have been Kevin Costner's voice because I'd seen Dances with Wolves 100 too many times. Unless there's not really too many times to see that movie. It's so great. So I pivoted big time and learned how to become an actor.
So were you already like headed down the road of environmental attorney? Is that where you're?
I was about to get my degree, my Bachelor of Arts in Geography, Human Geography, which I don't even know what that is.
Human
so
geography.
Let's go to the next
like
thing.
Like if I had so a map on my body?
Yeah, I don't know what it...
They figure out what part of you is made of basalt.
Exactly, yeah. Or what glacier you would be most akin to? I don't know.
If you could look
tree,
like a glacier...
What yeah. tree would I be?
Yes.
Yeah, there you go.
The Zena Glacier? So I left there. I did get a degree, so I did make my mother happy. I listened to her. I got the BA. I use it every day when I'm cooking dog food. I swear.
All right, I want to go back to this. So what do you make for your dogs, and do they all eat the same thing?
Well, Pogo right now is getting some turkey instead. He gets turkey and broccoli and carrots and zucchini because he's got a bit of pancreatitis going on, so it's a little less rich. The rest of them get beef, and I cook it up with broccoli and zucchini and carrots pretty much every day,
wow.
every other day. I blend it. I add some bone meal, some apple cider vinegar, some coconut oil, and voila, that's their dinner. And they're super healthy, touch wood. They've all done really well. And I still have not had a passing. I think New Leaf, who was my little Chihuahua black, if anyone follows me on Instagram, whenever someone passes, it's always... pretty upset for many, many, many weeks. The most recent was little New Leaf, who was a little black and white Chihuahua, who is my... I'm still mourning her. That was in October. But I think she had cancer that came back, and I found her. She was on the street a couple of years ago, and no one claimed her. And I think she had mammary tumors, so I'm assuming that cancer got her. But my point is that I really believe the food that I feed them has prevented... really dastardly things from taking their lives because they've lived 17, 18 years.
I'm reminded of one of the episodes that we did with Deb Greco, who I think was the foremost expert on canine endocrinology. Is that right?
No, feline.
Feline.
She's a cat vet.
Cat. Maybe there's some clues in there how to take care of ill pets going forward. We'll have to match you two up.
Yeah. Oh, listen, I'm always up for it because I do think that the home environment, I have seen, there's one, Nico, who's like my daughter. She's like the librarian. She's my helper, so she does everything at home and helps everybody do their learning and their maths.
We're still talking about the dogs.
Oh, yeah. Well, Nico's not a dog. Nico's a person.
Oh, okay.
In a dog suit. She wears a dog suit. But she had no hair when I found her at Carson Shelter. Like, her back was just had no hair, her tail had no hair, and then about 6 to 8 months later, she was thriving so much that she had those white walls. You know, they're her. I think she's a part golden retriever, so she's got that long, luxurious hair.
Yeah, yeah.
That just the love and the lack of stress in a really easy, comfortable environment where you're being served. It's like going to a spa. They leave. You know, the hellstorm of a shelter to go to an 8-star spa in Coachella Valley.
Yeah.
So who wouldn't thrive?
I have rescue dogs and I switched to making their food when our oldest was getting kind of frail. He was, you know, he was 16 and he was losing weight, and we got him stabilized for a good year. Once he started, he put on a couple of pounds. It makes a big difference.
What were you cooking for him?
I do
pizza
a little lasagna. I do chicken,
low sodium,
ground chicken with a little rice.
Uh-huh.
I do the bone meal. I put that in so they get the calcium.
Yep.
And
how did you know that? Who taught you the calcium thing?
The Google.
the Google
stuff.
Nice fellow, that Google.
I'm pretty good at Googling things.
Nice.
And actually, I have a friend at work who also makes dog food for his dogs, and he was like, you got to make sure because the calcium is... I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, so the deal is, if anyone's listening to this who wants to make dog
food... They may be moving slowly aside as we get deeper into bone meal, but...
Yeah, we're going to go deep into bone meal, but it's important because a lot of people will cook chicken and rice just for their dogs, and there's no bone in it, and I learned this the hard way. Rocco had a seizure one day, and I was Googling, like, what's going on, and it said, if you're only feeding them meat and vegetables, they're not getting enough calcium because in the wild, they will have a piece of bone, the calcium with the protein, because they're eating it raw. So it said just give him a cup of yogurt, and it just completely stopped his seizure that he was having. And that's why. So you just add a little bit of calcium for them to process the protein. Otherwise, they can't.
And so, yeah, I do that with either frozen peas or some other frozen tolerable vegetable.
Yes, tolerable. What, because you nip in there sometimes?
Yeah. No, like, I don't like the...
I love,
like,
asparagus.
We're not going to
go
lovely.
Too deep down this road, but, you know, you don't want to feed them corn and stuff like that. And I don't do broccoli because gaseous dogs are just not the way you want to go.
I don't have that issue at home. There's no one who's doing that.
Wow.
Yeah.
But it's the dogs.
It's the dog, yeah.
Well, I always blame it on the dog, of course.
Yeah, I haven't noticed.
Remy! Damn
all
it!
Right.
Remy's been out in the backyard for 2 hours.
All right, now it's the boys' show. It's always, you know, once we get into that.
Oh, no, we're not like that. It's your show.
It's not.
It's
no,
totally
I've escaped. This is my show now because I'm out of the house. When I'm at home, it's their show.
All right, so I have a question for you. Tell me, you were nominated for an Academy Award, the Canadian Academy Award. Tell me about that performance and what got you nominated.
Well, it was quite a few moons ago. I could not get arrested as an actor in Vancouver. I was training to become an actor. I moved to Toronto. I feel like it leads to this. It doesn't really lead, but I'm going to tell the little lead into that story, because if there are any people who are out there striving for their dream and it's not going well, you're just like...
Well, that would be me and Randy.
Here we are.
This fucking sucks. They just told me that... I read for my first agent in Vancouver, and I did the little audition, and he said... That was the worst audition I've ever witnessed. And I said, okay, I understand. All right. I stood up with every ounce of strength left to leave this guy's place in Vancouver. And I said, I'll see you in 6 months. I'll go and get some training. And I walked out, went down the elevator, started bawling, of course. But as I walked away, I just thought, ooh, now I have a great story. I know I'm going to be a success because I have the best first awful audition story. So I continued to get trained in Vancouver at Vancouver Film School, then moved back to Toronto because I feel like I was too tall for Vancouver. It was just too freaky for them. I'd walk into a restaurant and they just were, it just kind of, the computers and the brains of the Vancouver people just couldn't figure out, is that a man? Is it a woman? What is that? What's the, why is she wearing heels?
Why is she ducking in every door?
What's happening? So I eventually, I moved back to Toronto and I could only get a modeling agent, and I wasn't really doing modeling because I wasn't model-y looking. I was kind of, it just wasn't my thing. So I did get an audition for this indie film and got the role, and so we did the movie. It was like the third lead in the movie. And then that year when they were doing the nominations for the Canadian Genie Awards, which is what they were called back then, now they're the Canadian Academy Awards, I was nominated. And I was sick. John Kalangas was calling me on the phone, and I said, "What, John? I'm really sick. I think I have the flu." And he said, "Zana, you just got nominated for Best Supporting Actress." And I said, "What?" So that was really fun. That really started my career. So that was the peak of it. Was the first job for $750.
The first job was the bar,
and I've only gone down from there. But I intend to rise. I've got some good things going on, so I'm intending to pop back up.
Is it the same in Canada where, you know, months before the awards, they start putting out newspaper ads for your consideration and stuff? Was there any of that being done for you prior to the nomination?
I don't know how they... I don't want to... I don't want to say that I didn't deserve it, but because it's lovely and it was a cute movie and everything. It was just I don't know how they determine who gets nominated there. I lost to Catherine O'Hara. So when they did say, I was going by Catherine Zenna at the time. So when they said the winner is Catherine, I nearly just evaporated. I thought there's no way I'm getting it. Luckily, they said Catherine O'Hara. Leading up into that point was pretty fun because there's a lot of awardee, pre-awardee things like, let's follow Kate Zenna around at her house. And they had a TV crew come to my apartment.
Tall.
She's so tall. I remember in one shot of that when they did come and follow me around for the day. They had to shoot the cameraman or woman, whoever was shooting it. They must have slid the camera slightly to the right and they focused in on a paper towel holder behind my head while I was talking in my kitchen that somebody didn't replace. My boyfriend at the time, I blame him. So there were literally, like, somebody had really tried to get the last possible bit of paper towel from that paper towel roll that's now on television somewhere. You could find it. And there were straggles of paper towel hanging from the roll. It wasn't just an empty roll. I remember that. So those are the things to be mindful of if you're being
My wife and I, this has been an experiment for hundreds of years, basically.
43, I thought.
43, at least, where there's always a roll of something that somebody tried to leave just a little bit. Hair of paper on it so they didn't have to change it.
Yeah, it's like the milk in the... Well, in Canada, we had bags of milk, and it was like, who's going to leave just that much milk to not have to put another bag of milk or the... Or whatever it is, the carton of milk here in America. We had bags of milk growing up.
I want to explore this.
It's gross. It's the dumbest. It's so bizarre that we don't find it bizarre.
I've been to Canada, but I've never seen the bags.
They still have them.
Seen that.
Yeah, you buy 3 bags. It's so gross.
And you put them in a dispenser.
Yeah, so someone designed a plastic jug. Every household had them. They were often... like turquoise, like powdery blue, and they're plastic, and the plastic quart jug bag fits in these things perfectly. And then some genius invented a Canadian milk plastic bag zip opener so you don't have to take the scissors out because that's too difficult. So someone, and it has a magnet on it on the fridge, so you could just, look at that. Oh, thank you for this lovely Christmas
stocking stuffer.
But you
guys were so far ahead of the sustainability curve. I mean, those are things that companies are doing now.
The bags?
The reusable, where you slide the bag into it and you don't have to get rid of the big container.
I think they figured it out. I think it's. I don't know what the, those boxes of wine. I don't know which came first, the Canadian bag of milk or the boxes of wine that my piano teacher would be hustling her bag.
I'm guessing it's the wine because that would make you feel good about drinking a bag of milk.
Franzia wines. And yeah. I've had lunch with Mr. Franzia, who invented that, the box.
What, the cart and the box of wine?
The box of wine that has a Mylar bag inside.
Yes.
Yeah, that's Franzia wines did that.
Like way long time ago.
Long time ago.
No, I'm telling you, my piano teacher was hammered every time I go because she'd just sit there. I didn't know what she was drinking. She had long, straggly hair, and she'd just sit there with the big 80s glasses, and she'd her Hochtala wine or whatever the Domaine d'Or. Everyone in Canada would know this, the Domaine d'Or. And she would just sit there and sip her from a glass that didn't look like a wine glass.
Somewhere in one photo album in my house, there is a picture of me at a fraternity party at the University of Virginia, and I've taken the Mylar bag out of the box, and I've just slung it over my shoulder, and I'm just drinking out of the Mylar bag.
Like my piano teacher. That's really funny.
Do you two recognize each other?
Yeah.
You play the piano?
You were there. You were that kid walking out every time I would show up at 5:30.
Well, let me ask you this. So your first real big thing
gets you a nomination.
Mm-hmm. Have you been chasing that ever since?
You're going to say, has Hollywood been chasing you ever since? Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes. They're outside the door right now. They are. Have I been chasing that? Well, yeah, because when you're young, which I was then, I'm so much younger now, you think that's how it's going to be. So immediately what happened was I got lots of work on, it was all American shows in Canada, in Toronto, Canada, shooting. And Then I came. Then I moved to LA in about 2004, 2005, and I thought for sure now something great's going to happen. I turned down all these things in Canada. I'm here. All my friends were getting big jobs, and it wasn't happening. And I would get one audition for pilot season, then I would screen test. And I'd think, oh, this is the one. I'm going to get this job, and it didn't happen. So I feel like I am. I just don't have the give up. Oh. Gene in me, and I don't feel like I've been working steadily, like steadily as an actor with a salt shaker. Like if the salt shaker thing was my career, it's kind of blocked, you know, it like breadcrumbs or something got into the salt
shaker.
You're
in a low sodium career.
It's a low sodium career now. But I work here and there, and it's what we do as actors, working actors, is I'm a professional auditioner, so I audition often enough, and every now and then it goes my way. And but in the last 5 years, I started developing my own show because I realized, oh, it's not going to really. I could just keep doing these spotty jobs and having a lovely time being a guest role actor on things, or like what happened in 2012, I got booked as the lead on a family friendly show, and we thought that was going to turn into a series like Heartland, and it didn't go. The network just didn't pick it up, which is what it's. They're entitled to say no, whatever.
It happens.
It happens every year, yeah. Many times.
To a bunch of shows.
To a bunch of shows and a bunch of people. But I so enjoyed making that because it was family friendly and wholesome and lovely that I thought, well, I've already been approved to do this. Why don't I create my own?
And so tell us about the show you're creating.
Well, it's a wholesome, family friendly show. It's got a lot of meaningful, I guess, the theme of it is emotional wellness. I can only say so much about it because we actually just shot a short film of it.
No.
So we'll be inviting you guys to watch that when it's done in about a month. I'll find you and we can screen it. But
we're very difficult to find.
I'll find you here on a Friday morning.
Then we're not difficult to find.
On a Tuesday afternoon.
Tuesdays,
you'll be here.
Right here.
But I got really interested 5 years ago in veterans, which is a surprise for me. And this project has turned into something that's much bigger than me. So it started off as being something as a starring acting vehicle for myself. And now it's truly a mission. And I think that the rest of my life is going to have a huge component of it toward veterans issues and people with PTSD and emotional struggles, ourselves included, no matter whether or not it's giant PTSD things, and the connection between humans and animals to heal those wounds. And I think when all of my dog rescue, I see so many awful things every single day. And with every single dog that there is in trouble, to me, I see the human crisis behind every dog in trouble. So some human had to give up that dog and put it in a shelter. Whether or not that human was an ignorant human to what the situation at the shelters is, or whether that person is escaping domestic abuse, or they're being kicked out of their place, or whatever, there's always a human connection. So I just want to work on things that will help this world truly be a better place and help people heal. So that's what I'm... That's
was there anything in particular that drove you towards the veteran segment? Or did it just fell into place?
No. You know, to be honest, what happened was I went up to the Living Free Sanctuary in Idlewild. And I went on a tour, and I thought, I got to make a show about dogs and cats and rescue dogs and everything. And they said, do you want to see what we're doing with our horses? And I said, sure. So I went over to their horse area, and they had this equine therapy session in session. And I said, oh, the horses are getting therapy? And they said, no, this is horse therapy that helps people heal. Yep. And I said, tell me more. So I was watching what they were doing, and it was for veterans that they were working with veterans. So one of the veterans came over, and what struck me was that the people in that ring, in that arena, looked like me. And I caught myself having this really, I guess, prejudiced or racial profiling against veterans. I just had never really met a veteran. It wasn't in my lexicon of being a person. It wasn't in my family. There were no military people at all. And I thought, wow, this is ridiculous, because if there's one of me, there are millions of me who have a distance between the people who serve our country and risk their lives, and the families of those veterans who then have to sacrifice so much.
That's quite a thing that you caught that, though. That you caught that feeling as it hit you.
Yeah, I guess it was, and I'm glad that I dove into it, because I did so much more research into it and recognized and learned, to my horror, that I had never learned this until I did the research, that 22 military veterans take their own lives every single day. Mm-hmm. If 22 students, well, 22 students are actually, but if 22 teachers or congress people or like if we knew that statistic, we would be doing more.
It'd be a lot louder, wouldn't
it? Be a lot louder.
Yeah.
So then you recognize 8,000 a year, and then according to statistics, 100 people per person who succumbs to suicide is directly impacted. So this is touching all of us. So the veteran situation is my way into this exploration, and I expect the show to be one where people enjoy the fun animal stories and human stories, but we really need a place where we are learning how to be better people and live our lives better, because I think everyone is struggling. I think it's hard for all of us. So
I love that. Now, living free is that's quite a place.
It is.
I had a place up in Idlewild for a few years.
Did you?
And that was one of the places that we went down just to help. And what happened to them around the fire was, what was it, 2019 or something?
Yeah,
it was really
yeah.
scary, because they almost lost their whole place.
It was like the fire circled yeah. that 160 acres. So the movie that we made, we shot there.
Oh.
We went all over the place to determine where we were going to shoot it. And it was just like God kept bringing us back to this place. So we shipped in the crew and everyone came in and we shot it there. And so we've used, actually in the movie is a veteran who was healed on that property by a horse, a female veteran. And it's just, I feel like I'm just moving this thing along, and the people who've come on board it are, we're all sensing this is so much bigger than all of us. So
that's really cool. Thank you for doing that. That's a really cool thing.
Well, you've obviously tapped into that idea that, you know, in your own personal life, how animals are so healing, and it's reciprocal. I mean, and now you're rescuing dogs all over the valley and, and putting them in better positions. But there's something about just, and I, you know, I've had rescue dogs for years. There's something very healing about bringing a rescue dog into your home.
It's dopamine. It's dopamine.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, when I recognize that I'm a shopaholic. I was like, I looked at the credit card bill. It's like $300 at Cost Plus World Market, $300 Nordstrom Rack. That's my bar. I'm good, like Home Goods. It's always $300. I'm like, that has to stop. And then recognizing, oh, where's that need? And then so when I get anxious, when I have feeling like I'm having issues or out of control issues, what I want to go and do is. Look at Taylor Kitsch on my phone. Did you see that? That's my screensaver.
Good looking guy.
He's just that guy from Friday Night Lights. He's just that's embarrassing. I lost a bet.
No,
there's no story.
There's
I lost
be a
bet.
Story.
No, my girlfriend's maybe put that on there.
That's going to be the next episode.
Stuff.
It's going to be awesome.
It's not happening on this podcast. No, negative. The dopamine thing is real. So when a couple years ago there was a dog, someone called and said, hey, there's this dog named Milo. He's a black pug chihuahua. His owner is rehoming him. And they said, can you help? And they said, sure, send me some pictures and I'll post him. I posted him. A woman said, I'm really interested in adopting. And he's like an older, like not very cutie patootie type dog. So I didn't have a lot of people banging down my door. So this woman called and I said, okay, where do you live? She said, I live on a golf course. I said, forget it. That's not happening. And I said, all right. But I knew I was kind of desperate to find a place for him. Tell me more. What would your plan be when you let him out? Because there's no fence and there's coyotes and all that stuff. She told me a good plan. She had a staked in leash and blah, blah, blah. So I thought, I'm going to introduce you to the owner and let you guys take it from here and just let her know I've kind of semi-vetted you and you seem good. And I put them together. They did a slow transition for Milo. The first night this woman had him, she let him outside in her front porch with no leash. He left, and he has not been back. 2 years later. So
that had to hurt your heart.
Beyond.
Yeah.
So because I felt so somehow semi-responsible somehow. So the owner and I became really good friends. She was responsibly rehoming Milo. There was no rush to do so. There's a lot in the dog rescue community. There's a lot of craziness because people are getting their dopamine from this dog rescue stuff. They're getting their highs, their lows. They're getting their anger answered to. They're getting their compassion answered to. So there's a lot of controversy around the notion of rehoming a dog and how you can never, if you have a dog, it's for life. Life doesn't always turn out the way you think it's going to. So sometimes that has to happen. And if it's going to happen, do it calmly, responsibly. Don't be in a rush when you have to do it.
Do it the right way. Yeah, you know, when we've rescued multiple dachshunds, and all rescues, you know, all of the applications say if, it, you know, under what circumstances would you surrender a dog?
Sure, sure.
And, you know, I can't think of a circumstance I would, but, you know, you can't say there are no circumstances, because there obviously are.
I'll give you a list of 25 of them that I see daily on Facebook, and I just have to stay off Facebook because I see it's all the ones. I'm moving, death in the family, can't keep the dog, my dog doesn't like it, my kid doesn't like it, allergic to kid, my kid's now allergic, all kinds of stuff. So
right. A lot of the rescues have a clause where that if you were to have to surrender the dog, you would return it back to that rescue. Which I think is great because, you know, you want to make sure that the dog is going someplace good.
Well, you need people to think logically about getting a dog and why they want a dog.
Oh,
I mean, all the shelters are
full
of...
people think logically in the same sentence?
I'm sorry. Dog owners. But all the shelters are just full of pit bulls. And wiener dogs.
Everything.
No, there are not a lot of wiener dogs. They're harder to find.
Are they?
Yeah.
But you just have to call Kate Zeta. I'll find you a wiener dog in 2 seconds. I'll find you a tiramisu dog if you want. I can find them all.
Yeah. No, you know, now the big issue is there are a lot of big dogs, and I work on them. I'm on the board of Animal Samaritans.
Oh, you are?
Yeah. And, of course, we run a no-kill shelter.
Yes.
And dog placement, dog rescue.
But it's not that big, like that facility you're getting bigger?
We're in the middle of a campaign, a capital campaign. We're going to build a brand new animal campus, and it's going to be multiple times the size of where we are now.
Fantastic.
Breaking news on Big Conversations,
yes.
Little Bar.
That's not breaking news.
That's the first time I've heard it.
Right,
first time I've heard it.
You pay a lot of attention, Randy. It's, short attention span Randy is what we call him. And
I'm in that same. I'm in the same club. Don't worry, it's a good club.
Well, it's better. It was ADHD for the first 3 months, and
now
we call me something
Randy
different.
Randy Club. What's that acronym? Short attention span Randy Club. I'm in it.
Short attention. SARC. SARC.
SARC.
Yeah. Short attention.
SARC. Yeah.
Randy Club.
I want to go back.
Oh, no, it's short attention span. Go ahead.
I want to go back to born in Montreal.
Yes.
Raised in Montreal.
For 4 years.
For 4 years.
Yeah. I learned how to ride a two-wheeler.
Tell us all of your memories about Montreal.
There's a swimming pool, a large one. I remember it was very big. I was very small. Mm-hmm. I remember riding around on a bicycle behind my mother in that little seat. And I do remember riding a two-wheeler bike right off the bat. It's one of the things that I do, these Tony Robbins priming exercise thing in the morning, and you have to think of 3 moments that you're proud of, 3 moments that you're grateful for. And the other day, I remembered being on the banana seat bicycle when I was 4, the size of an 8-year-old, because I was so tall so soon. And I was so proud that I didn't have to use training wheels for my first ride on a bike, and I just... Woo! Went off and
I didn't have the same experience. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
I actually broke the other gift that I was carrying when I fell over on my on my bike
this
the first time.
This just means that I'm better than you as a full-on human
definitely.
Being.
And this was like only a week and a half ago, I'm just now getting over it. You know,
exactly.
Get through here.
But I thought we weren't going to talk about your height.
Yeah.
I was under the impression that...
That's the thing. I'm talking about the height. Don't ask tall women how tall they are. Do you play basketball? Volleyball? Wow, you're so tall.
Well, in my defense, I did not ask you how tall you were, and I never brought up the basketball thing. I thought it, but I didn't bring it up.
I want to go back, though, to almost everything I know about Canadian entertainment is Will Arnett and SCTV. Jim Carrey and that whole... What were your influences coming up?
Well... Kevin Costner is my guy. Like, honestly, I didn't think I was going to be an actor until university.
Until he told you to become one.
Until he came into my... No, he was not around. No, I mean, I just, it was a surprise and kind of, it was this, not a, it was kind of scary and daunting and weird and what? That's like me saying to you, oh, you're going to go be a dentist now. Yeah, so I didn't have people that I looked up. I loved Kevin Costner and Susan Sarandon and Bull Durham, so I had movies and things that I liked.
My favorite movie.
Yeah, mine too. You can remember that I believe in the small of a woman's back, the Hank Greerball, high
five. I just
did
that scene.
Yeah.
Did that scene in my acting class last week.
Did you?
Yes.
That's awesome. Yeah. Oh my!
And he was Tom Sarandon, so it was very different.
Yeah, I was. We're doing an alternative version of it.
That's so funny. Well, you know, when I worked with her, I got cast to work with her in a movie called Icebound. It was a CBS movie of the week, and she was playing the doctor who got stuck in the Antarctic. Look at human geography. Listen to this. This is how terrible I was at university.
Well, Canadians are even further north than we are.
It was something that had south in it, or an S. It had an S in it. So she was in the South Pole and had breast cancer and had to give herself all the chemo drugs and everything.
Oh, that was in Antarctica, yes.
Antarctica. Great. See, there was no S in it. Anyway, I had to work with her.
Well, they keep that at the South Pole, so you're right. You're exactly
Santa.
Right.
Santa, South Pole, and Mrs. Claus.
Oh, Santa's in the North
Pole. S's. See what I mean?
See? You're
and
Canadian,
I'm not even
you should
on mushrooms.
Know that. Santa is your neighbor.
You're
yes.
so close to Santa.
He's my father. Santa is my father. But I couldn't even, is that bad that I would use a German accent for
no.
Santa?
Okay.
Oh, is that what
know.
That was?
I don't know what it was.
No.
Well, his last name is Claus, which is pretty German.
Klaus.
Santa Klaus.
But anyway, so Susan, I could act opposite her, but as soon as they would call cut, I couldn't speak because I was so... Annie Savoy from Bull Durham. I couldn't handle it. So when I invited the director for dinner at my house with a couple of other people, he said, are you going to invite Susan? And he's like, I said, do you think she's going to, she would say yes? He said, yeah, she doesn't know anyone in town. I'm sure she would. So I said, okay, I'll invite her. And I said, let her know that I'll have my boyfriend at the time call because I literally couldn't speak. Like my mouth would just go dry when I spoke with her as a person. And so she showed up at the house, super hot. I'm Susan Sarandon in a black turtleneck and leather pants. And she opened the door. And again, I couldn't speak for most of the evening. And
it's the quietest dinner party I've ever been to.
Lots of other people talk, believe me. But when she said we kept going outside to have a cigarette, because back then we would have like one little smoker's a cig, you know, during the evening. She said, well, if everyone's outside smoking, why can't we just smoke inside? And I had to say, Susan, we don't smoke in the house. We just, I don't understand. I said, we just don't smoke in the house. We can't do that. So that was and that was it. That's
so you finally were able to speak to her, but only to chastise
her. To tell her no.
Stay out of my house.
You cannot smoke in the house, Susan. And the same thing when I met Kevin Costner about 8 years ago, the same thing happened. I literally...
You had to tell him not to smoke in the house?
No, I just stood there pawing his pea coat. He was wearing a really cool pea coat. I said, it's a really great coat. I couldn't say anything. You inspired me to become an actor was the only other thing I can remember.
As you rubbed his back.
Yeah. I mean, anyone else in the business, I know the story, but those two, I think those two somehow were my influences.
That speaks to great integrity, because honestly, like, one of my great heroes is William Shatner. If he came to my house and he lit up a cigarette, I'd find him a pack.
Yeah.
I'd light it for him.
You'd wheel him over to... Yeah.
No, he's still ambulatory.
Out for the ashes.
No, not we wouldn't wheel him over. You'd wheel over a carton.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'd be like, how many more of those do you want, sir?
That's really
Would you smoke in the middle of the house so it all smells like your cigarette?
Yeah, I can't. I guess I really don't like cigarette smoke.
Right?
That's it. I mean, it's really.
I would.
Well, right after
I would be a total sellout immediately.
Yeah.
Our first son was born, and we put a sign on the door that said, thank you for not smoking in our house. And this was back in the 80s when our in-laws smoked like three packs a day.
In the house?
No, they stopped coming over. They would not come over to visit their grandkid because we wouldn't let him smoke in the house.
That's crazy.
Which actually worked out for all of us because I was okay with them not coming over.
Because they're in-laws.
Oh, Kay might be listening to this.
Yeah.
Oh,
you just congratulate her on the anniversary, and now you're insulting her parents. That's
You gotta love them. Now I've got signs that basically say, "Please leave your phone on vibrate. I don't want to hear the beeps and the buzzes." Because most of my friends are from LA. They come. You come from other places, and then you come here, and they're not used to just you can just be here.
Yeah, people have a hard time. My wife lives in LA. And so when she comes out, it takes her a little while to like unplug and get used to the desert lifestyle. Just slow down.
Yeah, because we're not angry. Driving here, I'm kind of hoping for a bit of traffic so I can actually have a phone call for 10 minutes. There's no phoning. There's no calls now unless I'm driving into LA. Otherwise, I just get a lot done. I've already done many, many things today. Whole Foods, the UPS store, pick up an email, doing this. Blah, blah,
blah. I rescued 9 dogs.
Oh, that's a whole... Yeah, let's hope not. They're just an endless... It's an endless... I've got a Chihuahua addiction now, so it's very hard to
Because most of the strays in the valley... Uh-huh. I mean, a huge number of strays are Chihuahuas and Chihuahua Terrier mixes.
Little Chihuahua babies. There's little old Chihuahuas.
We call them...
just delicious. They are delicious.
Okay, that sounds like you're not rescuing them.
No, I just look at them and I love you so much. I love you so much.
They are super cute.
How much do I love you? Yeah.
They're super, we call those desert classics at Animals. Because, you know, we do an animal of the week. Tom Snyder.
I just realized who I'm not supposed to be talking to, which is you. Because if you've got like a hotline now. You're like my heroin dealer. This is not good because you're going to get a senior Chihuahua girl in and say, Kate Zenna.
Just open
Louis
up my trench coat.
For a replacement.
Chihuahua? Would you like a Chihuahua? A Chihuahua mix? We've got...
Seriously.
This side, there's a husky.
Yeah. No. My biggest thing now is that in order for me to help more, I have to focus on this show, getting this show that I was talking about up and running, because through that I think education is the only way forward, to teach people all the different ways that they can be better dog parents or cat parents.
Well, and to that point, you talk about responsible dog ownership. You did a podcast.
I did.
Yeah. Called Better Living with Kate, right?
Better Living or The Good Life.
The Good Life.
I don't mind what you call it. It is Better Living, isn't it? Is it Better Living with Kate and the Dogs? Yeah, The Good Life with Kate Zenna, because I moved here and I was finally learning about this notion of what does it mean to live the good life for you? Like, what's your good life, Patrick?
Oh, you're looking at it.
This is it.
It doesn't get any better than this. No, I honestly, living here in the desert is, you know, you can't, this is the pinnacle of good living.
What image goes through your head when you say that? As I clearly have taken over your podcast to turn it back into The Good Life with Kate Zenna.
That's fine.
So, Patrick.
Somebody had to ask some interesting questions.
When I say like good life, what does that mean for you and feel like for you?
For me, I think it revolves around my home, my family, my dogs. You know, all of that is like I think I am most happy. I do a lot of events. I do a lot of different things outside of the house. But having everybody at the house... feeding them. I like you know, like
you
being at the grill.
He does.
I like to cook. And so that to me is like the good life. Because I think Italians always express love through food. And it's always just you look skinny, sit down, eat.
Yes.
And that's what we do. But that is the good life. When you can take care of your family, when you can sit everybody down around the same table that's the good life.
That's beautiful. What about you, Randy?
I fully retired a couple of years ago, and I have to admit that part of the good life is not having anybody telling me what to do anymore. I really like that on a daily basis. When I picture the good life, the single picture almost every time is waking up with my wife in the morning and just laying there having a cup of coffee and watching the sun come up.
Wow.
And we do that almost every morning.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. Yeah. And it's the calm here that is the thing.
And that's why I need it. I talk all the time about the fact that I'm a believer that we have these seeds inside of us. And every moment we get to decide how we're going to water them. And there are certain seeds in the morning I don't want to water. So I don't turn on the news. I don't read the paper. I'm very, very particular about what I bring in that early in the morning. I screw it up throughout the rest of the day, but that first half hour of every day is fantastic.
That's beautiful. Yeah. I was just listening to, there's this thing called the Headway app. That's what just popped open when Taylor Kitsch also popped on my phone. That's what I was like, you have 5 minutes? You can learn something.
I'm meditating on Taylor Kitsch.
It's sure. Okay. That sounds fine to me. So it's,
well,
it's,
we know what Kate's type is.
It's a, I don't, do I? Do we?
No, I don't.
I don't. Let me know when you figure that out. So pops up saying it's the headway up, and you can learn something for 5 minutes, and there are these digestives of self-help or info books or whatever, and the one that I was listening to yesterday was really cool because it's stuff that we know. So when you're saying about the morning feeding yourself or watering the good seeds, it was the first half of your day to make the first half of your day amazing and doing all the things that bring you joy or finding all the good things that happen. So don't be watching the news and be really intentional about all of the things that you are engaging in, not just in that quote unquote morning routine, which is fantastic once you begin a morning routine, and I'm slowly growing mine. It's getting bigger and more amazing, and but to leave the things that are more difficult to the end of the day and into the evening, which is really interesting. So you're more excited to get out of bed in the morning, because if you don't have Mabel at home, who's my alarm clock, it's like, when Mabel wakes up, that's what's happening.
When you and you created a podcast around it, so when you talk about the good life, what is Kate Zinna's vision when you hear that phrase? I know it involves dogs.
Well, the good life is the air, the temperature today. Did you guys notice how beautiful the air is? So that's the feeling on my face. A hedge, a beautiful tall hedge, fully private area with a pool that I don't have to wear clothes in to get into. Usually me in a muumuu is also what I envision, with my arms open wide.
Well, I didn't mention that. Me too.
Welcoming, yes. Doesn't everyone wear a muumuu? And a feeling of Mrs. Roper, a younger Mrs. Roper, thank you. Toned Mrs. Roper. Is Mrs. Roper toned? And that feeling of peace within, knowing that I'm on purpose finally. Yeah. I've finally found my purpose, but that it's not a cold environment, I don't think. That's my feeling.
I can't believe that we've been sitting here 45 minutes or whatever, and we haven't talked about some of the other stuff you've done in your life.
I know.
You were on some very iconic TV shows, for instance.
Queer as Folk is about
Queer as Folk, yeah. I mean, talk to us a little bit about what the important parts of your career, the standouts that are in your mind.
Sure. Well, that was one for sure. Again, like the veteran moment of realizing, oh, this veteran and I were the same. We're the same. That moment when I auditioned to play, I identify, I suppose, as heterosexual, but I was playing a character named Corinne, and she was a love interest of, I won't remember because now I'm an elderly lady, apparently, not being able to remember details, but I was playing a lesbian. And I played it thinking, there's no way I'll get this role. I often do that, and then I'll book the role when I don't put too much effort in, too much importance of actually booking it. I try to just have fun and be me. And I thought, well, who cares? If I have a crush on someone, this is how I act, and it's kind of goofy for the most part, because I'm kind of goofy. And so that was an interesting process, because I got to play a person who I had seen the stereotypical notion of a lesbian in movies up until that point, because this was early 2000. So that show was the groundbreaking, let's show people that we are all just like each other, right, no matter who we snuggle with, is how I kind of put it. So that was very cool, even though Michelle Clooney did decide to eat ranch dressing and a carrot right before our makeout scene, which was kind of, bug her about that, but she's just like, whatever, man. Like, well, some people like garlic. I'm not a garlic eater.
We talked about it over a cigarette.
No.
But not inside. It was outside.
But then the thing that I loved, really, I think is my most favorite, was Nero Wolfe, with that Timothy Hutton starred in and produced. And that was really cool, because every episode of that show, we played different characters, and they were all women, or all people from the 40s or the 50s, And I got to play, you know, I talk like this, and she had a whole different way of moving. And I thought, you know, she's going to move her shoulder like that so you could kind of look at her boobs a little more. You know, that's what she's doing. And she's not very smart, but she doesn't think she's not very smart. She's very smart in her mind. It was those fun characters.
You like going into character?
I do,
That's cool.
I really do. And, so... hopefully this next thing, this where I'm playing a veteran, is going to be something also really cool, because to go into those places and to just leave Kate and the dog lady over here and go somewhere.
Dog lady.
Well, little. There's one other thing, too. Driving over here today, I was listening to some music that you performed.
Oh, yeah?
Tell us about that and where started.
That band is, I've had a few bands. That one is Point Claire.
Point Claire.
That's on Spotify and iTunes. Mm-hmm. And Point Claire is where I grew up and rode the bicycle. So that's a suburb of Montreal called Point Claire. And Jonathan Fessenden and I are music partners of Point Claire. And we've written a bunch of electro poppy songs that are, we've had some license to TV shows and stuff. And I'm due for some more music. I don't know that it'll be electro poppy. I think it might be more folky guitar
songwriter.
That's how I do. So I often write those songs with my six chords that I know, and that's it. And then I say, Jonathan, make this palatable for regular people.
How many instruments do you play?
The six chords.
The six chords.
I did grow up playing piano with my domain door drinking piano teacher, but because she was drinking so much, I could kind of talk her. We would spend most of the time talking, so I didn't have to play. And so, yeah.
So never really learned piano.
I could play, but I can't play like that anymore, and I could read music, and I can
maybe
still
if you
music.
Had a little wine.
I should have had wine.
That's what, yeah.
I don't understand why this 19-year-old, 21-year-old limit is, it's kind of stupid. I would have been much more prolific. Is it?
No, I meant now.
Yes, I should do that now, sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
So you could harken back to the...
Yes, yes. It's my birthday, by the way. On Sunday was my birthday, so
really?
It's birthday week. So thinking of that, I will be drinking this week because it's my birthday week.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
That's
Thank you
great.
So much. So that's...
We are not going to ask how old you are, as we did not ask how tall you are. So
39. 32.
That's why
maybe?
I didn't ask. That was my guess.
Yeah. You know, you just have to, it is what it is. So today, I'm hosting a Zoom and meeting for the first time. I'm quite nervous. I'm going to be presenting, screening the movie that we've made.
Oh, wow.
Highlighting veterans and equine therapy and all of that for some female veterans, and it's going to be, I'm sure, pretty humbling, because the ones who the people who I've shown it to who are veterans, to see men crying is pretty wild. Like, it makes you really talk about being hooked on dopamine to rescue dogs, but when you can use your talents and experience as an artist to move people and to maybe potentially help them to learn that maybe you too can heal through horses and community and nature.
That's got to be an amazing feeling.
It's just the I think it's just the beginning, because we've been waking this for the last 8 months. So now that it's beginning to seed out, this is now when we have the power. So
well, I love that you have such purpose behind it. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of creative projects don't have that drive.
Mm-hmm. And behind all nine of her careers, she's mm-hmm. got a tremendous purpose.
Right.
Yeah, this is the most purpose for sure. Now, the next show that I want to do is a dog, has to do with dog stuff. That's in development. But this is, I can't do anything without purpose. And I also, the people who came on board to back it, to financially back it, so now we're meeting with various funders and investors for the TV series. I want people with intention behind it. I want all of the money people to be part of this. So whether they're philanthropists in the space of mental health or whatever, I want that energy, because together as a village we will be able to actually make a difference. Because as many a foundation as there are in this arena of mental health and everything, it's just not getting the, it's still not making an impact. And I think we need regular broad audience shows and movies that's how people are learning these days. So can we not just make more Little House on the Prairie?
Been a while, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. We could, but there'd have to be aliens in it and
not
stuff
mine.
Like that.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I'm doing it. There are no aliens, man.
It's so funny that you say it, because many months ago, I had COVID and you had to stay home, you know, of course.
I heard about that thing.
Yeah, it was a thing. And
I was out looking for Milo, so I don't know what you were doing.
That entire time. No, but there's a channel that just plays like Walton's episodes.
Yes.
And I started watching that, and I would watch it every day and while I was home. And, you know, it just takes you back to a much simpler time. But there were great little morality plays.
Yes.
Each hour was a morality. And it was so funny because I got to the point where every episode I would text my wife and be like, what are you doing? And I said, well, John Boy's in a real pickle now. And but they were great stories.
Yeah.
And so I love that you want to tell stories like that in that way.
Yeah. I'm going to prove to Hollywood that love is addictive and binge-worthy so that you don't have to end an episode on these fear-based, are they going to die in the explosion or whatever. Well, let's have hope and love be the thing that drives a show and people come in. They're ready.
I'm rooting for you on that, Kate. It's time.
Yeah.
This has been a fantastic almost hour.
She's terrific.
Yeah. I'll come back. We'll do a screening.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll talk. Well, I'll let you know when we do something here.
That would be great. Mm-hmm. Kate, thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me.
And a special thanks to John McMullen for plucking this peach of a guest and bringing her to us. Thank you, John.
John, thank you for plucking me. Thank you. I do believe I'm a nectarine, although my chin might say otherwise.
Well, we got through another plucking this week.
Yes.
Once again, happy anniversary to you and the lovely Kay Florence.
Thank you so much.
And we wish you another 43 years of joyful marriage.
Oh, don't say that to her.
To you or somebody else.
And sunset watching. Sunrise watching.
Every morning.
Yeah,
we love
beautiful.
It. Yeah. Thanks for being here today. Oh, this was fantastic.
It really was.
Our guest, Kate Zinnen, you can follow her on Instagram, and we'll be anxiously awaiting more information about your latest project. We'll look forward to that. My thanks to John McMullen, our producer, and of course, Alan Horowitz, our in-house counsel, who is here every week to enjoy.
Wake up, Alan.
What we're doing. And my great co-host, Randy Florence. Always fun, my friend.
And I'm awake.
But yes, now.
I won't be much longer.
Now you are. That's why we give them caffeinated beverages during the beginning of the podcast. Thank you all for listening, and there will be another episode very soon on all of your favorite podcast platforms. You can always find more at BigConversationsLittleBar.com. And if you are in the Palm Desert area, we encourage you to stop by and thank Skip Page for being our host.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Big Conversations Little Bar. Recorded on location at Skip Page's Little Bar in Palm Desert, California, the center of the Coachella Valley universe. This program is a production of the Mutual Broadcasting System. All episodes are available from BigConversationsLittleBar.com or from most major podcast portals, including Apple, Spotify, and Amazon Music.